Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Dog days of summer. Although summer just started, didn't it? Well, whatever. All right, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode, edition, whatever you want to call it, of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Here at WGNplus.com, I am Jim Toronto, your humble host for the next hour, as we have a little fun. And this is fitting, as I sometimes say, and in the words of Bill Cosby, and if you're not too careful, you just might learn something. I don't think Bill learned anything, although I think we learned something, that once again, unless a celebrity has a videotape of a crime, they will not be convicted. Wow. Maybe we'll talk a little about that later, but whew, I mean, I don't know how, you know, and I guarantee you that cane that Bill Cosby's been walking around with, you won't see that cane anymore. The cane's done, I guarantee you. Won't be walking around that cane anymore like the poor, old, helpless creature who's being attacked in the twilight of his years. Wow. I am Jim Toronto, as I said, and this is episode 58. 58! I say that every week because not really as any kind of a countdown or any kind of a... It's more out of sheer shock. 58 of these things, whatever they are. So today we're going to talk about a couple of things with a couple of different people, as I did last week. Thankfully, for the summer months, we're able to talk to Mick Kaler on a regular basis, who was actually started out on the podcast with me 58 episodes ago. See how I bring that back in? And he does have some time this over the summer months to join me, so... I'm glad to welcome Mick back. Hello there, Mixter.
Hey, bud. What's going on?
Oh, not too bad. Surviving here in the it's officially summer now.
That's right, officially summer. We actually had a field trip today with our summer school students to the Brookfield Zoo, and
they still have they don't now. Do they?
Long day.
Do they still have the dolphins?
Oh, yes. I got the dolphin show. We didn't do that, but we did a lot of other things. We saw the wolves, and we saw Mr. Lion, Mr. Tiger, Mr. Fox.
Well, I'll tell you,
reptiles.
I have to say, my wife and I went to Brookfield Zoo a few years ago. I'm not a huge zoo fan, but I can do a zoo.
Sure.
You know. And I have to say, we went to Brookfield. It was pretty much the zoo of choice, as you say, on field trips. That's where we went. We didn't,
right.
Even though I was born, I mean, I went to school in Chicago and everything. We didn't really go to Lincoln Park Zoo. We always took the bus.
Right.
Or the car caravan and went out to Brookfield because of that, you know, that porpoise show.
Oh yeah, the dolphin show, sure.
Now they still have the Moldorama.
Oh yeah! In fact, we actually walked by those. It was really cool because the other day I was actually we were reading an article about 3D printing and how they can 3D print shoes and other things now. And I was explaining to the kids. I said they thought that was a 3D printer they were watching. I said no, that's a wax thing. They've had these things for years. But when you think about it, that's almost like what a 3D printer does. It'll actually create something right in front of you.
In my day, we didn't need any 3D printers.
We had wax.
We had wax in a machine that made a mold. And when you bought it for a quarter, it was warm and you had to let it dry or it'd burn your fingers. And even if it did, it didn't matter because suddenly you had an ape or a porpoise in your hand. And you liked it. You loved it.
There you go.
Yeah. So,
anyway, we had a fun time. It was a fun time, but, you know, when you've got students around and there's other, you know, young kids there, they just want to see every little thing and even the little gophers and chipmunks that run around.
Did
wild
you go into that Africa thing where
oh,
in the habitat?
Oh, yeah. We did all that.
Because doesn't it rain in there?
Yeah, yeah, they do that, and it's just every little thing. It's neat for them because every little thing is totally fascinating to them, which is fine and fun. But by the end of the day, we get on that bus to go back to school. It's like, okay, thank God it's over.
How many hours were you there?
Only about three, and we had lunch there too, so it was nice.
But I have to tell you, though, here's my point, though. So my wife and I went, and it had been many years since we had gone, and we don't have any kids, so, you know, it was more of a nostalgic, you know, kind of a thing. And I have to tell you, I was very disappointed, and I have vowed, even though no one cares but me, it's a one-man protest, which I don't think is making much of a dent in the Brookfield Zoo attendance.
Sure.
But I have to say, if you notice today, Mick, I assume, because when I went there a few years ago, there were no elephants.
Yeah, that's right.
I got to tell you, you got your green alligators and long-necked geese.
I was singing that song on the way home, driving everybody crazy on the bus.
Some umpty-bach camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats, but no elephants.
I know.
And you know what? If you're as sure as you're born, you ain't going to get no Jim Toronto unless you got an elephant at your zoo. I want to see a pachyderm. That's a zoo. If you don't have an elephant, then to me, you don't have a zoo. We've already gotten rid of the circus because of the cruelty.
The circus completely died. Ringling Brothers died because of the elephant.
Because of
issue.
The whole elephant controversy, correct? But my point is, so I'm walking around this zoo, and I'm like, hey, that's nice to see the meerkats, and it's nice to see the chimps, and it's nice to go to the gorilla house, and it's nice to see everything. But I can't wait to see that big old elephant lumbering around. And then there was this sign that said, we don't have any elephants.
No elephants.
And I said, well, you know what? You don't have any elephants. You don't have any Elton Jims.
Well, there you go.
So I'm not going to Brookfield Zoo until they get a friggin' elephant.
Well, my students wanted to see the wolves. They wanted to see the tiger and the lions. So they saw that and the reptiles. So they got what they wanted. But, yeah, not having an elephant there is disappointing. We didn't get to everything, but I didn't remember seeing giraffes, but we did see the camels. We did see the humpty-back camels.
Oh, you didn't see the giraffes?
Yeah, I'm sure they're there, but we didn't see them. But the other thing that was really cool is nowadays they let those peacocks just kind of walk all over.
I know.
And it was really cool because we're having lunch, and one of them just came right by us while we're having our lunch in the picnic area. Just like, oh, okay, here we go.
Did you see the porpoise show?
We did not go to the porpoise show. We didn't have time for that.
But they still do have it.
Oh, yeah, they still got that. They got the whole thing going, yeah.
All right, because I didn't know if that was cruelty to animals as well.
Yeah, well, sometimes they talk about that with those killer whales and that kind of thing. So I've never been to SeaWorld, so I wouldn't, know about that stuff. But they talk about that, too. But anyway, good time. But like I said, by the end of the day, we all get on the bus. It's like, all right, let's get back to school and let's go home. We're done.
Yeah, no kidding. So here's what I wanted to talk about today, because this happened to me actually this week. And I have mentioned this in previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. If you go to my landing page, which is on WGNplus.com, under the entertainment section, you could find the Elton Jim podcast, Captain Podtastic little prompt, and it'll take you to all other 57 of these episodes. And a few of those last year, or actually it might have been 2 years now, I've got this picnic bench, a wooden picnic bench that I bought a couple of years ago. And so, you know, it was very nice, and we out there in the summer, sit at the picnic bench and have dinner or lunch or just sit down and read the paper. It was kind of nice. So I bought a cover for it, and, you know, it's a big bench, so, you know, it's like 7 feet long, so I know where to put it. So I bought a cover for it for the winter. And last year, when I opened the cover, there was all this black mold.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, what the hell? The thing wasn't even a year old.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was trying to find out how I could do this. I actually talked to Lou Manfredini, WGN's very own.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And he said, there's probably some moisture got in, and maybe there wasn't enough varnish on it. And so, yeah, there's, moisture got in underneath the... you know, the varnish and got into the wood and bop, bop, boop, beep, beep, beep. And he said, well, it wasn't that difficult. It's not that hard. You got to resand the thing, though, and buy this spar varnish, you know, and it shouldn't be that big of a thing. And, you know, but I'm like, once again, I'm not, I don't putter.
You're not Mr. Handyman.
No, I'm not DIY.
Right.
I'm CTG.
Call the guy.
I am not DIY. I am call the guy.
Yeah, call the guy. Yellow Pages,
yeah.
Google.
And not to say that I know, especially now, everybody's into this whole thing, and there's TV shows, and there's Mr. Fix-Its and all that stuff. And I certainly, when I first got married as well, I tried to do things. I'm not completely helpless, but I know I don't have the patience for it, and I certainly don't have the expertise in that. I certainly can do, I can paint, and I could do, you know, I've spackled. I've been known to spackle.
Sure.
But, you know, the thing that comes with being able to putter is not just knowing how to do something, but also to know, A, what not to do, and B, you're able to identify a possible problem within the process,
right?
And call an audible, and make sure that you do that. So, you know, this thing sat all year last year, and now I pull it out again this year, and now I'm like, I got to do something with this thing. I can't just let this sit. I had a friend who was going to do it last year, and then he tore his knee out or something. Okay, so he's out of commission. So I'm like, all right. So now I'm like, I can't let this thing sit another year. You know, it's only 2 years old.
Right.
So I talked to another friend of mine who is a painter and an all-round handy guy. And he said the same thing that Lou said and other people. You know, it's not that difficult. You know, sand it, you buy, and he said the same thing that Lou did. You buy this spar varnish. So I'm like, okay, this seems to be, I'm getting the same, you know, I'm getting the same advice.
Yeah.
And I had a guy come over who was doing some painting around my house, and I showed him. I said, what can I do with this table, you know? And he says, well, you know, it just needs to be refinished. I said, yeah, I know that, but, you know, I said, well, what would, you know, what would that cost? He said, $350.
Oh, my gosh.
The table cost four.
I'm like, you're for $750.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute. I should, why should I waste my time? I might as well buy a new table.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'm not spending $350 on something that I know darn well shouldn't cost more than $100 to do, even if that. And I asked my friend, and I said, so how, if you didn't know me, and I showed you this table, and he said, he goes, I'd probably charge you $100. And even that, he goes, because, you know, the supplies will probably cost $50, and it'd probably take me a couple of hours. He said, so I'd probably charge you $100. I said, well, I knew $350 was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, my friend lives, like, you know, an hour away, and he's always busy because, you know, he's one of those guys. He's always, you know, he's hustling for work.
Yeah. Always going for new jobs, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel bad. I mean, I don't want to take money out of his pocket. He's not going to, you know, charge me what he would charge a normal person. And plus, it's an hour just to get there, you know. So I'd love to use him, but I think of him, think about, you know, his situation more than mine. So I saw him over the weekend, and I talked about this table again. He said, here's what you got to do. Okay, fine. So I'm like, all right, I got myself psyched up to do this. So I went to Menards, also brought some Spreckers.
Okay.
My favorite beverage. I got some grape and some root beer Spreckers because they sell it at Menards.
Yep, I know.
And then I went, I got exactly what he wanted. He said, get 60 grit, whatever that means, 60 grit sandpaper.
Okay.
So those were sheets of those, five sheets for $4. So it's, you know, it's not a huge table, but I got five planks of wood I need to sand. I don't know how much. So I buy, you know, eight of these packs, right?
Okay.
Just to be safe. So eight times four, we're already at $32. The spar varnish for a small little quart, that's 16. And then my friend says, you know, you should use a straight brush, not a curved brush or one that's on a slant, because you want even strokes. Okay, buy a brush, new brush, $10. So I'm already $50 in.
Right, there's your supplies.
And I haven't even sat at the table yet. So here I go. So now I start sanding. And I'm sanding, and so it's fine. You know, this varnish that they put on there came off very easily.
Okay.
Because clearly they didn't do a good job of putting the varnish on. But I'm noticing, because this table has been out for over a year outside in the elements, you know, even in the summer, even though I cover it in the winter.
Right.
Some of the wood, you know, was when the varnish came off, it's exposed to the elements. And so it's gotten like gray, you know, and kind of dirty. So, you know, I'm sanding as much as I can to get this gray off. Cause in my mind, you know, if I don't get this gray off, if I put the varnish over the gray, it's going to look like it's variegated.
Yeah.
It's not going to look like, you know, like nice, smooth, new wood. So I'm smart enough to know from past experience to not just do it and then go, oh, this doesn't look right.
Right, I made a mistake.
Because then you got to call the guy and pay extra for him to redo what you did.
Yeah.
And then do it again.
Right.
So I said, before I put this on, I'm going to call my friend and find out, do I need to sand this down to the nub to get this gray off, or will it even come off? Because I've been sanding and it's not going away, and if I keep sanding, that's the wood itself.
Yeah.
So I call him, he goes, oh, the gray, yeah. Oh, that didn't come off? And I'm like, no, I said, it's all over. Oh, okay. Well, what you gotta do is you gotta go back to the store and get some deck wash. Because, and it will get rid of, it even says it on the label, it will get rid of the gray. And I'm like, okay. Are you sure this isn't just for men?
Yeah, the hair stuff. Right?
Yeah, I know how to use that, believe me. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. So first of all, I'm sitting here, I'm completely filled with sawdust from sanding. Right? So now he tells me I have to go back to the store.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, you know what? I also noticed, because the table's been sitting out for a while, I did notice there's a couple of, you know, some of the wood is starting to actually split. You know, it's not huge.
Yeah.
But it's kind of splitting. Oh, it's splitting. Well, then you might need to get some wood filler.
Oh, my God. This is not worth it, bud.
So, you know, I said, when I heard that, because then he goes, well, you know, I said, so then I put this deck wash on it. I go, how is that going to get rid of it? He goes, it just does. It just does. I said, but it's the wood. Isn't that the color of the wood? It's a miracle. It just does. And he goes, but, you know, now it's going to, because in my mind, he said, this shouldn't take him more than 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, I'm up for 2 hour DIY as opposed to a CTG, right?
Right.
He goes, you know, this is going to, you know, add time to your 2 hour expectation, because now you're going to have to, this deck wash is going to have to dry.
Yeah.
Before you varnish. I said, well, how long does that take? Well, you know, it depends. I mean, you know, if the sun is out, I mean, I don't know if it rains, you don't want it to rain. You might have to put the thing in your garage. I said, I know exactly what I'm going to do. And he said, what? I said, I'm going to get my cover, because I pretty much sanded it. You know. I said, I'm going to get my cover. I'm going to put the cover on it. And guess what I'm going to do? CTG.
Call the guy.
I'm finished. And he goes, but it's so simple. I said, yeah. I understand. I said, it's simple for you.
Right. It's second nature to him.
Yes.
But especially when you said wood filler.
Oh, yeah.
What am I, building a tree?
That's what I mean. And, you know, once again, like I said to him, I said, here's the thing. If you would have come to my house and seen my table before you started, before you went to the store to buy the stuff, you would have said, oh, wait a minute. There's a lot of brown streak or gray streaks here. before we do this, I'm going to have to get some wash,
yeah,
you know, some deck wash. Oh, and you know what? I see some splits there. I'm going to probably have to get some wood filler. You would have known that.
But you don't.
But I don't. Why. I just had his initial directions written down. 60
yep.
grit sandpaper, spar varnish, 2 hours. Thank you very much. And that's my point is no project is the same.
Right.
Even though there's directions on how to do it, every person's project has its own. It's just like a doctor.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, this is the way you take out a kidney. Okay, but, oh, wait a minute. Look at this kidney.
Yeah.
And you have to know, the professional goes, oh, well, I didn't know that was there, but I know how to take care of that. If you told me, you here's how you take a kidney out. You make an incision, you go in, you cut the kidney, and you take it out. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
Now, if there was a tumor on the kidney, or
right,
some
or just you know, some kind of bleeding, or
yeah,
some
or some
of,
fatty tissue, I don't know what.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about the call the guy thing, it reminds me of that great Andy Griffith episode where Aunt B had that old freezer and she bought all that meat for real cheap from the new butcher.
Right. Oh,
and then the thing starts breaking down, and then Andy says to call the man from Mount Pilot, and he's saying, "Aunt B, call the man.
Just call the man."
Exactly.
Just call the man. That's where I got my whole call the guy from, actually.
Yeah, call the guy. Just get it done.
Ain't me. Just call the man. And that's exactly, and that's where I learned that, because you talk about TV shows, that's where I learned it, because Aunt B didn't want to call the man.
Right, exactly. And she had all that meat. It was just gonna go,
yeah.
It was gonna
and so
talk.
she called Goober, or no, Gomer.
Yeah, it was Gomer tried to fix it. Yeah.
And Gomer tried to fix it, and then all of a sudden, like a whole spark went off.
Yeah.
And it's like, call the man. And then it started shaking. And
yeah,
at the end of the day, she came home and Andy called the man and
yeah,
bought
the guy
a new one.
Fix it, and he bought a new freezer for her.
Exactly. And you know what? The meat crisis was over.
Exactly.
So,
and I'm totally with you, Jim, with this expert stuff. I have a local friend, a guy a couple years older than me that I went to high school with, who is literally, he's a professional handyman. And when I have certain jobs, I'm like, you know what? I can't do this, but Bill can, and I'll call him up, and he'll come over. He'll charge me, and he gives me a little bit of a break, and we, you know, do business or whatever. But just get it done. It's just easier that way.
Well, first of all, it takes them half the time.
Yeah.
Because they know what they're doing. They do it right.
Right. That's the other part. Yeah.
And now, like, for instance here. So now I'm $50 in.
Yeah.
And I still got to call the guy.
Yeah, you still got to call the guy and pay him to fix this up.
Yeah, so now I could, I mean, when the guy comes, I could say, hey, guy, I've already got the spar varnish and I've already done a little of the sanding. So at least the money that I put in, but he's still going to charge me.
Right.
You know, $100 or $150. So I'm still going to wind up paying more than I would have. The aggravation, but once again, thankfully, I stopped. I've learned my lesson enough that I stopped before I did any real damage.
Right, before you get in too far or too deep, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, with these DIY things, is there's also, and let's, I'll be the first to admit it, there's a male ego thing that you don't want to admit that you can't do it, you know, especially with your wife around or something.
Sure.
And you know what? I have long dismissed that.
Yeah, throw that out. There's no masculinity.
I am
there.
Like,
there's no,
yeah,
there's no nobility in that.
Call me Charles Nelson Reilly. I don't know how to do it. I'm proud I don't know how to do it. And I'm proud of the fact that I'm honest with myself,
yeah,
to call the guy.
And man enough to say, this is not for me.
Yeah.
Someone else will come in and do this right, and then it's done, and
yes,
I don't have to worry about it.
And I'll tell you, this is the first, because I learned my lesson early on, or when we first got, you know, we lived in a condo for a while, and we had our first house, and I tried to do these things, and if I did them, they were okay, but they weren't completely perfect. And then sometimes I was way out of my league,
yeah,
and I had to call the guy, and I realized after calling the guy a couple of times, wow, is this nice to call the guy.
Exactly.
Because he knows what he's doing, and I don't even pretend. Once again, I've given up on the masculinity thing.
Right.
I'm proud to say that I am not a DIY guy. So this thing took me by surprise that I was even willing to go as far as I did.
Right, as far as you doing it yourself.
Yeah, but the problem was, the thing is that I'm having a problem finding anybody to do this because a pro, this is not a big enough job for them.
Right.
Like, I just heard, the reason I'm even talking about this today is I got a call today from my painting guy. This is another guy, not the 350 estimate guy. This is another guy that does a lot of painting at my house. And I told him, and he saw it too, and he said, you know what? He said, first of all, I'm way too busy.
Yeah, they got other things.
Yeah,
going.
He goes, this is a small job, you know, for me to take away from a big job to do this. He goes, plus, you know, it's still going to take me a couple, 3 hours. I'm still going to have to charge you blank. And I'm like, so he says, I said, well, I got a friend who might be able to do it. You're better off getting your friend. Well, I don't know if my friend can do it or not. So, this table is, if I let it out here continually to be open to the elements, it's going to wind up falling apart.
Yeah.
And I am going to buy a new one again. Or I'm just going to.
You should just buy the new one. That's what I do.
Really?
That's what I do. I just say, you know what?
Wow.
I learned a lesson here.
You got $400 you want to give me?
No. You can handle that part.
It's easy for you. Yeah, buy another one. I mean, what I was thinking of doing is actually, I mean, I'm really thinking about this is actually just instead of the varnish, because since I've already sanded it for the most part, I might just paint it.
Okay.
And then I'll paint it every year.
There you go.
Every year I'll know that I got to put another coat on it.
There you go.
Because this whole varnish and wood filler, I mean.
Wood filler. I hear that. I'm not a craftsman.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
I can build birdhouses.
But first of all,
okay.
It was, you know, this deck wash. And I said, how does it work? It just does.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know. So, I mean, so do you, have you ever tried any at your house? Have you ever tried any kind of projects that either went wrong or?
The one that really went well for me, and it just came to mind that I thought of that I didn't think I'd be able to do, was I had to change a faucet in my bathroom one
Holy
time.
Cow!
And I took Polaroid pictures. This is before cell phone cameras. This is a few years ago.
I bet you took some Polaroid pictures. Yeah, what about your sink, though? What'd you do at your sink?
I had to do in the sink. Yeah, exactly. And I brought it to the
I know you have a Polaroid camera. I just didn't think you took pictures of your sink.
Yeah, well, sometimes you can. And so I did that and brought it to the hardware store, and they showed me exactly the tool I needed to pull out my old thing and put the new one in.
I beg your pardon?
I did that right. But I'll tell you the DIY project. I always remember this because what kind of driveway? Do you have a cement or do you have asphalt?
Cement.
Okay, I wish I had cement. Okay, you've seen my house. Long driveway. It goes from the street all the way to the back of the
that's
house.
That's how mine is, yeah.
And it's asphalt. So for years, I've always had to seal the driveway.
You did? Wow.
Now, sometimes, there were times that I did call the man.
Call
and say, you
the
know what,
guy.
This year I'm too busy. You come in and with your big truck and do it. But I got to be honest. It's a job that I actually like because it's cool seeing how it looked and then getting out the 5 buckets of tar, you know, stirring each one up and spreading the stuff out, right?
Oh, my God.
So, this was about, I think it was like summer of 2000 because I just bought a new car at that time. Now, the first thing you do, obviously, is you put your car in the street because once you put the tar down, you can't drive on the driveway for a couple of days. And I put it down, the tar, pretty wet and thick because I like it to really last through the winter, right? So it's summer of 2000. I get this new car. I go out and get my tar. I get my brush and everything. I clean the
driveway
off.
Where do you get tar?
It's the sealer stuff, the seal coat stuff. You get it at Menards, 5 gallon buckets.
Really?
Yeah, so I get 5 buckets, and I had this big oar, an oar from a canoe that I used to stir the stuff. You should see me; I look like a witch.
bubble, toil and trouble.
But it's like a 5-hour job, but I actually enjoy doing it. So this one late afternoon in like it was like September like 2000, I went out and said, "Oh, you know what? The weather's cleared up; it's going to be dry the next couple of days. I'm going to do this now." So I went out and started working on it. Jim, I'm about a third of the way down the driveway. It was a weekday. Now, this was back when I was working mornings for radio. And I look in the garage as the garage door was open. I did not pull my car out of the driveway before starting the ceiling.
How could you have done that?
I was so focused on wanting to do this that I just didn't think about it.
Oh, man.
So I've got this thick, wet sealant stuff, you know, that it's tar, sealant, whatever you want to call it.
Right, right.
About a third of the driveway down. Oh. Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, I got to go to bed and get up at about midnight. This is not going to be dry. I'm not going to be able to drive over this. Am I going to call in sick? What am I going to do, right? So I felt so stupid. It's like painting yourself in a corner, kind of.
That's exactly what you did.
So what I did was I went to the basement, and we had everybody has a big rag bag of old rags and stuff.
Yeah.
We had about five or six old bed sheets. I don't know why we still kept them. Full bed sheets. I went and laid them out on the tar, one after another.
And drove your car over it?
And rode my car, because my car's brand new, so I don't want to get tar all over that. And I backed over all of it and got the car down into the street.
Yeah, but didn't you leave marks?
There was a little bit of a mark, and all I did was I pulled the bed sheets out and obviously threw those out because they're covered in tar.
They didn't stick to the tar?
What's that?
The bed sheets didn't stick to the tar?
No, they didn't stick to the tar. There was enough dryness happening, but I was able to pull the bed sheets up, and there were two grooves where the tires were, and I had to go over that a little bit with a brush, which I could do from the side.
Right.
But I swear to God, Jim, when I looked, I was like a third of the way down, and I just looked behind me where the garage is, and there's my brand new silver Taurus sitting in the driveway in the garage, and I'm like, you idiot.
That's a Larry David moment. I mean, that's...
Oh, serious. Yeah. I should have just called it and said, you know what, car's not working, see you the next day.
Exactly. Oh, that's the thing, too. I've always, so often, I'm so methodical, and I'm always very organized, and yet you forget something so simple. And so stupid, and you go, how did I fog out on that?
Yeah, just a brain cramp, whatever you want to call it. And the thing is, I've done, like I said, most summers I do the driveway myself, so I'm like, I'm used to doing this. But I'm just like, what did you do, you idiot?
Well, I have to, you made me laugh too, because I bought this spar varnish.
Okay.
For $15. It's a quart.
Yeah.
So my friend says to me, now make sure when you get the spar varnish that you really stir it good. Don't shake it.
Okay.
Stir it good. He said, because when you get it, all the stuff is kind of goopy on the bottom.
Okay, yeah, you got to get it all mixed in.
So you got to really mix it. You can't shake it. You got to mix it. I'm like, all right. So, you know, I figured, once again, in my methodical way, okay, before I start sanding, I'm going to at least open the varnish and already have it stirred.
Sure.
So that when I'm ready, I can start. Well, I open up the varnish thing. So right away, you open it up and some spills out.
Yeah.
So now I've got that bad, you know, those bad plastic stirrers that you get with your paint. And I'm starting to stir this. And I pull it out and it's totally goop. I mean, it's all goop. You know, there's all the liquid, but there's just total goop.
Yeah.
That I have to so as I'm stirring it in this little small can, all the varnish is coming out of the sides as I'm trying to stir this stuff. So I think I probably lost already about a quarter of the quart.
Just in spillage.
Just in spillage. So I'm already swearing because then I think I did it on the grass. I don't know if I'm either going to have beautifully varnished grass or I'm going to kill the grass. I don't know what's going to happen there. But all I know is there was bags and paper towels that were all sticky. So I was like, my hands were like, if you cut yourself shaving and you put the little pieces of tape, paper towel that was my hands were just filled with paper towels because my hands were filled with spilled varnish.
Yeah.
And I knew then I should have called the guy.
I'm in overhead.
Yeah, I know.
Call the man.
And so, but you know what I did before I called the man? I called the wife. Because when she was leaving in the morning, I said, she goes, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing the bench today.
All excited.
Yeah, and she rolled her eyes. And so she goes, oh, what's going on? I said, a mission aborted. She goes, what are you talking about? I said, I just got through the sanding stage, and there was already way too many side trips.
Right.
First of all, I would literally have taken a shower. I could not have gone to the store to buy the deck wash and the wood filler. I mean, because I was completely filled in sawdust.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, so now I have to go. You know, this 2-hour do-it-yourself project is becoming a 7-hour, well, maybe even a 2-a-day thing, because if this deck wash has to dry, who knows how long it dries?
Right, exactly.
And then I purposely looked to see that it was not supposed to rain.
Yeah.
This was on Monday of this week. Thank God I didn't do it.
Right.
At 2 o'clock, it started pouring.
Exactly. It was going down like crazy.
And it wasn't supposed to rain. So, you know what? I don't know. I might just buy some paint, slop it on. I'll have my 4 meals this summer on it and cover the damn thing up and put it away again. Well, but I tell you, as much as I've done some goofy things, I have your driveway story is pretty good.
I didn't even tell my mom. You know,
You can't. No, you shouldn't tell anybody that.
No, I just was like, I'm just doing this. I'm just gonna pack it up and we'll just throw out those sheets and all that.
I love that you take out, but that once again. So now you're getting bed sheets.
Yeah.
You're devising all these crazy ways to do this.
All these parallel schemes to get out of this thing and finish it, you know?
No kidding.
Call the man.
At the end of this segment, I'm going to end this segment by saying the motto is, I have two mottos, we must do and call the man.
Amen, brother.
Right. Well, thanks a lot, Mick. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, pal. Catch you later.
Take it easy. And we're back here at Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic, episode 58. And we go from Mick Kaler, we go to Emily Arminetti. Hello, Emily.
Hey, Jim.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Not too bad. Did you hear some of my escapades? Of my DIY,
I'm thinking I might be able to help you out. I like to do DIY stuff.
You do?
I'm surprisingly good at it. Yeah.
Really? See, I don't have the patience.
Yeah.
I don't have the patience.
I mean,
or the expertise.
You know what? If it's something that I think either can be done quickly, so it can save me time that way, or it's going to cost more money to try to get something fixed than to just try to figure it out myself. Or to buy a new one, then I'll do it. Like, I have taken apart a VCR and put it back together.
Wow.
Just to, like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
This was back when, like...
That's impressive.
People were still using VCRs, so they were kind of on their way out, but I didn't really have a DVD player yet. And something got stuck in my VCR, and it was very important that I could fix it, because I had to watch my recorded episode of Sex in the City.
I knew it was Sex in the City. I knew it was Sex
totally,
in the City.
Totally.
I called,
I am not joking, I called a repair shop. This is where I started my own like DIY career.
Right.
And I called the repair shop and the guy's like, lady, he's like, VCRs cost $99.
Go just buy it.
You twice as much for putting it in. He's like, just go buy yourself a new VCR. I'm like, sir, you don't understand.
I need the tape.
And so I was like, I'm just going to one step at a time figure out how do I take this apart, how do I get it out, how do I put it back together, and I did it. In fact, a couple weeks ago, I fixed my dishwasher.
Honest to God.
Yes, I got my number 15 Torx screwdriver out.
And what was wrong with it?
Well, Jim, I had a look at the impeller.
Well, I mean, I barely know.
So what was wrong with it? So it was, I mean, I knew there was a problem because there was, like, water was not draining.
And what's a Torx? Like, what did you have? A Torx what?
Screwdriver.
The only Torx I know is Peter Torx from the Monkees.
Well, this is why you have to call the guy.
Oh, I have to. Oh.
You got to call the guy. But see, I was like, if I call the guy, who knows how many days it's going to take him to get here.
But how would you even know what to do? How would you?
I have to. this is what I'm saying. You just have, my little episode with my VCR 20 years ago gave me the confidence that, like, I can figure out, if I just take it one step at a time, I can figure out. You just start taking things apart. You start looking to see what looks right, what doesn't look right. Maybe look up the manual online, because we can do that these days.
So you had this Torx screwdriver. What did you take apart? Like, how did you even know where to start?
I had to take, well, you go over the water, like, so there's water collecting at the bottom. So I checked the drain thing that's, like, inside, nothing there. I opened up the trap. I don't see anything obvious there.
The trap?
There's, like, a little part.
What's the trap? I don't even know what you're talking about.
I can't explain to you the way it is. We don't even have enough time for this. But
my head is, right now, even from the beginning, my head is spinning. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Well, I finally take it. Then there's like a little, then once you open up the trap, you don't see any obvious obstructions there. Then there's a little bit that's like, you know, it's screwed in. And I'm like, okay, next step is take that apart, open that up. So I take a screwdriver, I open it up. There's the impeller, and sure enough, caught in the impeller a piece of glass.
Oh, and so that's what was the impaler, you said?
Impeller. It's impaler. It's
What's an impeller? The only impeller I know is Clara Impeller. She was on the Where's the Beef commercials.
Okay, if you ever dare to try to fix your dishwasher, and a person, because you can also call, you can call the manufacturer and troubleshoot with them. I didn't have to do that.
Sometimes I'm not even sure how to start my dishwasher.
Well, that's the problem too, okay? But if they tell you to find the impeller, it's the little Ferris wheelie looking thing. It looks like a Ferris wheel, and it moves around.
That's and where is that?
It's in your, you got to get to the trap, and then it's usually
what's
behind
the trap?
A little door, a secret door that's got screws on it. And so if the impeller isn't working properly, then it can't push the water into the drain pipe.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll tell you, you are more of a man than I am.
So here's the deal. You come clean out my closets. I'll come purify.
Yeah, see, that's me.
You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Yeah, that's me once again. I'm good at cleaning out closets and throwing things out.
Right.
And you're over there like Madge the plumber. When you do this, like, do you do that that one pose, like, of the woman, like, you know, that vintage poster of the woman with her hair up with
I tie a red bandana.
Yeah, the red bandana and the smock.
I put on a flannel.
Yeah, exactly. That's you.
I was just wearing my everyday.
Wow.
My everyday.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean.
I'm a big fan of it. You got to at least give it a shot before you call.
Well, here's the thing.
I never called a guy.
I have given it a shot in the past. And I have most of the times done more harm than good. And so I've just, I have just been honest with myself to say I am not. I don't have the patience for this. I don't have the aptitude for it. I don't have the expertise or the knowledge. And so I shed away all of my ego, my male ego and masculinity, and I become Paul Lind. And I just say, hello, is this the guy? Can you come over and fix
me?
Can you fix my house?
I need help.
Yeah, and I don't even.
I can respect that. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm honest enough with myself to say because I have in the past tried to do it, did it wrong, called the guy and paid more because I had to fix my damage and then fix the original problem.
Right.
So
the guy shows up and he's like, "So who is this?"
Yeah, exactly. Oh, there's some other guy. Yeah, right. Well, I'll tell you.
I don't know. I think my wife was trying to get in there and say.
Right. Well, kudos to you. I'll tell you. I mean, I give you a lot of credit for even knowing what a Torx screwdriver is.
Oh, yeah.
And not only knowing what it is, but know how to use it. I mean, so what? How does a Torx screwdriver?
It's like any other screwdriver. It's just the way that it fits. You just have to make sure that it's just a specific kind of screwdriver that you have to have for certain things.
I don't even know if I have one.
Yeah. It's just the shape. It's the shape. It's nothing. It's not like a drill. I wasn't like drilling.
Yeah. No. Well, I wouldn't even have. Whenever I see something go wrong, the first thing I reach for is a phone book. That's not. It's not any kind of a tool. It's a phone book. So anyway, well, I'm baffled and impressed by your DIY story. So very quickly here, I did want to talk about some interesting thing in the pop culture news today. Now this happened in Chicago, and you're out there in Austin, the hip area.
Yeah.
And but I think you can still relate since you are a former Chicagoan. So I was very saddened to see this story, and I'm very I was happy that the Chicago Tribune on June 20th wrote a lead editorial about this. It's not something that you would think that a newspaper would talk about because it was about the arts. It wasn't about government or some supposedly weighing problem, but it does cut to something about free speech, and so I think so obviously newspapers are involved in that. And so here's the deal. The Steppenwolf, which is a very well-known theater group, not only here in Chicago but now nationally, was started by a group of ragamuffins by the name of Gary Sinise and John Malkovich and Glenn Headley and Laurie Metcalf and a lot of other people that have gone on to amazing success. And Steppenwolf actually has won a Tony Award of its own because of its prominence in locally as well as nationally in some of the plays that have actually gone to Broadway that started at Steppenwolf, like August, Osage County, or most recently Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf and Tracy Letts and people like that, all from Steppenwolf. So obviously Steppenwolf was one of the crown jewels of Chicago theater. So they had this play that's currently running called Passover, and there's a critic who's been with the Chicago Sun-Times. She has been a critic for almost 25 years, and she had a problem with one of the characters in the way the character was portrayed and in the way the character was written, and so she wrote about it in her review. And Steppenwolf was calling for her to be banned from getting free tickets to any show and banning her from writing critiques because she was too tough and wasn't, appreciating the creative effort of this play. And, I mean, to go to those extremes, to not give the critic, comp tickets to write about your show and then telling other theaters to do the same thing, to me, that's a really scary kind of a quashing of the First Amendment of freedom of speech, especially by a theater which lives and dies on creative speech. So I was very disappointed to see Steppenwolf come out so vehemently against a bad review.
Sure. Well, I mean, you mentioned it, and I had a look, and it seems like actually it's not just Steppenwolf. It's now, there are a lot of other companies that are backing them.
Right. Well, because they're prominent, and so there's whole little community now is banding. But my gosh, you have to take the good with the bad.
Well, yes, I totally agree with that, and I think any artist knows. Like, if you want to believe your good reviews, you're going to have to believe your bad reviews. Having said that, I mean, the whole thing is a little perplexing because on one hand, if you actually look at her review, the review itself is not negative.
No,
it's just
about this. It's about this one character that she had a problem with, and they accused her of being racist.
Right. They're saying that she's being racially insensitive, and I do think that. What she said, okay, so let's talk about what she said. Okay, what she said was that no one can argue with the fact that the city has a problem with the use of deadly police force against African Americans, but much of the lion's share of the violence is perpetuated within the community itself, end quote. Okay, so that's exactly what she said in her review. Now, I would say that that is actually racially insensitive because it's a gross generalization. And I think it's interesting that she calls the ending like a simplistic wholly generic characterization of a racist white cop when her comments in and of themselves are exactly that.
But that's the thing. It's all couched in the fact that it is her opinion. And
I agree with you. Yeah.
And so it's not, you know, it's fact versus opinion. There are differences. And so what gets me is even if it was racially insensitive, that's my opinion. Now you can agree with me or disagree with me, but you can't call for a boycott.
Well, okay, so I hear what you're saying. But I think the press in Chicago is playing this up a bit much because, you know, as you said, that they're basically saying they want to take her comp tickets away. You know, the theater community has got this petition going to not give her comp tickets.
Right.
Now, if they were trying to get her fired or if they were trying to sue her or sue the paper over it, then I would say, yeah, guys, you know what? Let's take a step back. Let's have a chat about the First Amendment because, you know, there's no debating that. But I think what they're doing is standing up to what they see as like a pattern of insensitivity on her part.
Well, I understand
what
that.
What I understand is it's not just this one review. Like, apparently there are other reviews that she's written that people have taken exception to, and now it seems like this one might be the straw that broke the camel's back.
That's still fine. But you cannot expect someone to, you know, if I still come back to the fact, if you put yourself out into the public, then you have to be ready and you have to have a shark skin to take whatever criticism there is by whoever decides to criticize something, regardless of whether they agree or disagree with your point of view.
For sure.
And so
that's why this is so confusing. It's a really strange position for members of the theater or any artistic community to take because, you know, ultimately, you know, freedom of speech and the First Amendment help like that enables them to do what they.
Well, of course. I mean, all you hear about. All you hear about are plays. I mean, there's a play that's right now in New York that's been getting a lot of flack. There's a production of Julius Caesar that portrays Caesar like Donald Trump. I mean, it's Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. It looks like him. And so they've cast it in a contemporary time. And so some sponsors have pulled out. And, you know, they're complaining, well, how dare you pull out? Well, if a theater group decides to do this, then that's their right, and they will fight for that, and that's what they're fighting for. So I mean, it's the same way here. A theater thrives on the ability of freedom of speech to push forth ideas and push forth different concepts that they feel are important. That's fine. But then so you can't quash the other side of freedom of speech of somebody who either agrees or disagrees. I understand what you're saying. And I think that it is kind of a murky line. But I think that if the line is murky, you have to fall on the side of freedom of speech as opposed to quashing this. I'll be honest with you, and the Tribune says it too. I get a sense a little bit of this kind of thing that's going on a lot of college campuses now, that, you know, a lot of conservative speakers are not being allowed to speak at colleges because the more liberal side of the student body don't want them to appear at the college, and so their speeches are canceled. And that's another thing. It's like that's not right. Everybody has the right to talk. You don't have to go to my speech, but you shouldn't have me canceled because you don't agree with my opinion.
But it's a tough one, though, because it's like, I mean, again, you know, like if students want to say, well, you know, we're not interested in seeing this speaker, so we're just going to boycott the ceremony if that person's speaking, and then the university makes the decision, it's a tough thing because it's like, it's also their prerogative if they think, well, you know, this isn't. I mean, it's a little bit like saying.
But my point is, you don't have to go. It's the same thing, you know. Turn the station. If you don't like my art, don't go to the gallery. If you don't like my TV show, there's a don't don't you know, turn the station. If you don't like my radio show, don't listen to it. But you don't, you shouldn't call for my ouster just because of something that doesn't agree with you. And that's what, I'm coming back. I hate to sound like, you know, like an old fart here, but once again.
In my day.
Well, here's the thing. I think that, you know, there's a lot of younger people are not used to getting criticism. They were not raised getting criticism. And now they're out in the real world and they're not equipped or not used to being told that what they're doing isn't important or isn't great. And there's a little coddling going on here. And that, and if you get into, like I said, if you put yourself out into this public, into the public arena, look, between my career as a journalist and as a radio person and even as an actor, I've put myself out. I've got my share of good reviews. I've got my share of bad reviews of my writing, of my performance, of my radio work. Hey, I chose to come out into the public arena. I got to take the good with the bad. That's just part of it.
Let's be honest. Mostly the bad reviews are when you're trying to do your bad British accent, right?
Let me just tell you, dear, that my British accent is actually... I also do a fantastic Michael Caine in that when I do my Michael Caine, people think that he's really on the phone. Did you just think you were talking to Michael Caine? Certainly you did.
I'm almost regretting that I even brought up your bad British accent.
I'm walking on air.
But back to your point about this generational entitlement thing, I mean, you know, I definitely think that happens. But in the case of Steppenwolf, even that is not, that is a head scratcher too, because, you know, from what I understand, the statement that was made, which was signed by the artistic director and the executive director, you know, those, and they came out with a statement that literally started with, we denounce this, you know. So they're making a strong statement there. But, you know, those two are older than I am by a handful of
years. Well, certainly they are. But at the same time, they're in the bubble. But they're in the bubble. They're surrounded by younger people. And it's the same kind of thing. You start to, there's two things that go on. You know, I mean, you know, if you're older, and you'll find that out sooner than later. no, but if you start hanging around with younger people, you want to be cool. And so you go, yeah, you know what? And then, wow, look at, oh, they're fighting for, you know, that person, you know, I could look up to them because they're fighting for me. They're not stuck in the past. So some of this is feeding off of that, the younger people's opinion. And some of it is either, the person, you know, the older person's either that is their held opinion, or it is to some extent, and I don't know these people personally, but I could just tell by personal by experience that sometimes you sort of, you know, you sort of, it's a group thing. You sort of want to get into the, yeah, you know what? Hey, I mean, all I know is that this person has been doing reviews for 25 years. They're not some new person, and they're an older, and they're older person. So once again, I think the younger people are probably rebelling. The older people in charge are latching on to the youthful, inspiration or passion about this cause. But, you know, once again, it's the chicken and the egg. Without the critic, there's no actor. And without the actor, there's no critic, because the critic tells the people about the play. And without the play, the critic has no job because he's got nothing to see. So they both they both need each other. And at the same time, they both hate each other.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that I understand that part of their response was that, you know, they were saying, you know, she's not willing to work with us to create a positive environment. And I do think that that is a little bit...
That's not her job.
Right, exactly. As a journalist, it's not her job to work with them to create any kind of...
No, it's my job to
report back.
Exactly.
To the readers, you know, so that we can decide what we want to spend our hard-earned money.
Right. That is not... She is not involved in the production. It's not her job to make the production better or worse or more... open to the community. It's her job to look at it and make a judgment on it and talk about it in her opinion. That's her job.
Well, and here's a question. So, you know, I feel like, because I do agree with that. And, you know, it's interesting because when you actually read her review in full, as just a reader, I would think like, oh, actually that play sounds good. I'm going to go see it. So, you know, I don't think in any way it stops people from wanting to do that. You know, I think that this criticism that she had, which is, I agree with them, racially insensitive, you know, that's something that I feel like, I guess my question is like, why are there public statements being issued? Why doesn't Steppenwolf just say, you know what, to themselves, well, you know what, we're actually tired of this pattern of insensitivity and we're just not giving our comp tickets anymore.
I think
driver for going so public with the, you know, with like, especially if there is a pattern and she's done this before, it's like, to what end? You know, like, why does it matter if there's a public debate about
this? Well, once again, the thing is that the theater, I mean, the press, it is not their job to help the theater. The theater does what they want to do. And they certainly, to be honest with you, they don't want anyone to tell them what to do. And if this was and to your point that the review was mostly positive, if that one little line wasn't in there, they probably would have taken her review and put it up on a billboard somewhere because she liked the play.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she said a lot of really good things.
But, you know, I think that you got it, that when you start quashing people's opinion and hey, like I said, I've been a music critic, I've been a movie critic, I've been a theater critic. When I decided to go into acting and go into plays, I said to myself, okay, this is good, you know, put up or shut up. You know, you've been sitting there at plays in the dark and criticizing what other people are doing. So now you're going to get up there and let the arrows come. You're going to have to take the good with the bad. Thankfully, most of the reviews that I have gotten have been positive, but there's been some times when I haven't agreed with some people. That's part
now,
of the.
When you were a critic, did you ever get any, you know, angry phone calls?
Oh, certainly. I heard back from some people, and I basically said at the end, like I said, and when I got bad reviews, I would never call or critic because I'm like, no, that's not my job. But when I did get some angry mail or get some some pushback, I would just have to say this is the simplest argument. It's my opinion. This is what I saw. You can't argue with that. You know, it's the same way. I could have every logical. I could talk to somebody who's very much into religion, and I could have every logical argument against what they're thinking or that they're believing, and all they say to me is, "Yes, but it's my faith." I have nothing to counter that. I can't counter that because at the end of the day, that's what they believe, whether it's logical or not. And in many ways, people always say faith is actually believing something that is unbelievable. And it's the same way here. I if I'm a critic and I have a problem with this performance or this thing, the only way I could justify it is I'm sorry. I didn't like it.
Right.
And you really can't, and you could try to give me, yeah, but I was trying to, I understand what you were trying to do. For me, it didn't work. And as a critic, I have to be honest enough to say that, even though I know it's going to hurt somebody's feelings.
Right.
But that's part of the job of the critic. And as I said, that's the part of the actor or anybody who puts themselves in the public forum. I mean, I remember when I first started writing a music column and I was a music critic and I would talk about different things and I would get, you know, letters from people. You know, I was 20 years old and I was like, well, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, okay, hey, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong, but I'm going to continue to do that, and I have to be able to take that because I've made the decision. If I don't want criticism, now today with social media, I mean, everybody's a critic. And everybody's in the public, so it's hard to really, I mean, that's.
And everybody, not only that, but everybody's a journalist.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, yeah.
Everybody, yeah. Everyone's constantly reporting on everything.
Yeah, I mean,
the status
of journalism today is very sad because it's been greatly diluted. And now, as you said, you know, bloggers are considered quasi journalists, and yet they can always hide around the fact of, well, I don't need to back up my sources or confirm my sources because I'm just blogging. Well, you are, but you're putting.
Well, also, just the nature of how news is delivered. I mean, the reality is, you know, if there's a 5-alarm fire in your neighborhood and some guy happens to be driving by and snaps a picture on his cell phone and puts it on Twitter, and now suddenly that guy is now reported on that before any reporter seen, and that's just the way. And of course, that, you know, something happening in your neighborhood is a little too local, but these kinds of things happen now on a national and a global scale, depending on the nature of whatever the incident is.
Yeah. Well, so, like I said, I understand, having been on both sides of this, of being both a critic as well as being an actor and being in a creative and production and that you're trying to do something. And I understand the work that goes in it. I understand the creative vision that goes into it. And believe me, I understand the passion that goes into it when you're involved in that kind of a creative endeavor. And so you say, geez, what does that person know? They're just sitting there and looking. They don't know all the hours I put. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. And it's not my job to consider all the work that you put in. My job as a critic is when the curtain opens to when the curtain closes, and the impact and the performances and the total creative thing that it had on me. And the person sitting next to me can have a completely different view, and theirs is just as viable. So all this is my job as a journalist and a critic is to say, here's this play, here's what it is, here's what I liked, here's what I didn't, and as you said, and then allow the audience to make up their mind.
Sure.
And that's what...
it's interesting that you've been on both sides of it, and I'm curious to know, are you going to go see this play?
Well, I am. I'm now. That's a funny thing. I'm intrigued to see it now because I want to see the controversy. I probably wouldn't have gone to see it before, but now I'm kind of intrigued to see it. To say, okay, I'm commenting on it.
What's
from
all the fuss about?
Yeah, what's all the fuss about? And hey, maybe Steppenwolf has a point here. But even if I thought they did, as I said, when it comes down to this murky line, between quashing freedom of expression and letting it be, I always have to to fault on the side of letting it be, even if sometimes it's unjust, and even though it might be misogynistic, racist, or whatever. If you start picking and choosing, then that's where you get in trouble. And I think that's what we're finding in our society today, is that There is such a strong sense of I'm right, and no one else could be. If you're different, if you think different than me, then you're just wrong. And many times you're just evil. And I mean, and that's what I find interesting in today's society, is that we're going more toward it's all or nothing. There's no middle ground anymore.
That does seem to be where we've been headed lately.
Yeah. I guess I'm just a little disappointed in Steppenwolf, because Steppenwolf, at its core, it started in a little basement, and it was doing theater in a new and aggressive, and it was pushing the boundaries when it started. Right. And so to now have it, it's certainly more respected. Beautiful theater, Tony Awards, national, international respect. For them to now suddenly be on this other side, away from freedom of expression. If you have the freedom of expression to present something on the stage, then the writer or the critic has that same freedom of expression and right to say whether they like it or not. And I think that's what it comes down to. So I will still go to Steppenwolf, and I may see this show. But I was a little disappointed that, you know, an organization like Steppenwolf that has been such a leader in pushing the boundaries of theater and expression would then try to quash somebody's, and that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. So
right.
Well, Emily, once again, it's always fun to talk to you, both seriously as well as silly. And I enjoy both equally. I love to talk silly DIY projects with you, and I love to talk about the First Amendment with you. So
yeah, we are a rich tapestry of pop culture.
So as we said, now I learned another thing about you. So now, yes, I will certainly, if I've got a problem with any kind of appliance, I will call you.
Oh, yeah.
And if you need problems in either decluttering or organizing your closets, you give me a call.
Yes, I think this is a very, very good arrangement.
Equally beneficial.
That's right.
So from now on, now it's not call the guy, it's CTE. Call the Emily.
That's right.
And we will CTE next week. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Tim.
Okay, take care. And that ends number 58 here of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic Podcast. Every Monday, a new episode is posted up on WGNplus.com. So I hope you will check out the website every Monday for a new episode, and also go to my landing page and check out the previous ones before. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. This has been Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.